President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. When we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this August the 20th on the West Coast, now August the 21st on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, as well as on BBSRadio.com. And tonight's one of those nights where we're going to cover many topics, probably, as we usually do on Friday nights, which pretty much span almost everything that we cover on this show from night to night. There's a lot going on in the world. Of course, are we hearing about it? And no, they're trivializing the news again, focusing on celebrities and their dysfunctional issues. It seems to go in waves. And, of course, we've been lied to still and still are being lied to in regard to what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. There are also events going on in the Persian Gulf. And I can only stress that the best thing that we all can do is just pray that the evil leaves this planet, that it dies a quick death and passes on to another realm, and let these people rule their own kingdom elsewhere. That's about all I can say on that score. The corruption that we talk about from night to night on this show and many of my guests and I write about is continuing on as if it never went anywhere. And that's because it hasn't. It's just gotten worse. And we're slowly, as a group of people, coming to the realization that if we're going to change things, all we have to change is the system. Just begin a new system the way we envision it. That was done in the past. That was done with God's blessing on America. And slowly it was overtaken by evil. And like all the other cycles that occur naturally through the universe, that cycle has to end. It's time now for it to end. Now, tonight, we're going to discuss a topic that we covered last week, but I want to make some preliminary remarks in that regard because I've had flashes of consciousness all day long without really thinking about tonight's show. I knew that we were going to be continuing a very important topic about how we can produce power. And we last week defined what electricity is and where it comes from. And we got into the more ethereal aspects of energy that exists throughout the universe, not just in the ground on planet Earth, but everywhere. And that things are constantly moving and changing and vibrating at different frequencies. And I had these series of moments all day long where I would have this understanding of the concepts that we talked about on last week's show in an ethereal regard. In other words, energy is everywhere, and yet it comes from someplace, and it's moving along a pathway or multiple pathways. And I would speculate that it's through multiple dimensions that this is occurring simultaneously, and that as life is created out of those energies becoming focused and concentrated with intent and purpose, we have physical existence as a result. And yet those finer energies keep coming here, empowering all of nature. And there's a system. There's a cyclical pattern that we can observe happening as the seasons change, depending on where you are on the planet, from one to the other. And we get these extremes. We may talk about that aspect tonight, but the reason I bring that up is because whether we understand exactly what the process is that's going on or not, the process is going on. And it does not need our assistance in being able to be what it is and do what it does. Yet man seems to have this propensity to interfere with the natural processes as if somehow he can control them. Yet he doesn't understand the essence of the source of what he seeks to control. In fact, he violates universal law on a regular basis. And usually it's for money. It's to satisfy a greed that is insatiable. So it's a sort of madness in and of itself and unto itself. It doesn't really matter what the goals of perpetrators of evil deeds on this planet have in mind. They're violating universal law, and eventually they will fess up or be required to fess up and claim responsibility for that which they have done in destroying nature and destroying lives and in violating the universal laws. And I think they know very well what they're doing, but they have this sort of egotistical attitude that it doesn't really matter what they do. They don't believe in God per se. They know there is a God, but they are not convicted in that because they worship the dichotomy of the Creator, who most of us call God. And the being they worship is destructive. So to get at the truth, we have to go outside of the system that they have created, because it's one that's built on a foundation of evil. And its long-term goal is to reach lower depths of depravity and evil. And we're witnessing that. We're seeing things that never have happened in history before. And yet, in other ways, they probably transpired exactly the same way. It's just that the records have been hidden from us or destroyed or never even kept as a small group of beings decided that they were going to rule the planet and rule it with an iron fist and rule it through war, through murder, through death, through destruction. And yet there's another process that's going on in the universe. This is what I was feeling all day, is that there's life and there's sustenance coming to the earth, and that it can be captured, it can be stored, it can be grounded in a sense, and be used to help the earth heal itself, and to help us heal ourselves and meet many of the needs that we have. Needs that we have become dependent upon because we have allowed others to become rich while violating the laws of nature. So with that introduction and considering what we talked about last week, I have a hunch that tonight's show is going to be rather interesting. I'd like to invite my regular Friday night guest on Evident Footprints back to the show. He is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, my co-host on Friday nights, and my good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well. And you, how are you doing?
I've had a really turbulent week, but other than that, I'm okay.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
It was interesting to hear your intro because, you know, these are subjects that I dwell on fairly regularly, and hopefully some good things will come out of talking about them.
Yes, well, I don't know how congruent my intro was, but I just wanted to basically put my thoughts and my feelings out there and attach it to, you know, these, for lack of a better word, I guess you could say they were little visions of a sort. It was as though somebody was communicating a message to me, about the true nature of what is occurring in space, what is occurring in this galaxy and in our solar system and on our planet. And this is not something that we talk about a lot. We talk about our own experiences rather than, let's say, things that we're shown or things that come to us, you know, through our consciousness. And so I hope you got the message of what I was saying anyway.
Yeah, I got the message, and interestingly enough, I mean, I'm somewhat familiar with what I think the context of that message is or was. We've talked about it in various other shows, but never focused on it, you know, directly. And I get the feeling that that's what you want to do tonight.
Well, I do. And, you know, we ended last week's show talking about dielectricity, and you had given some great definitions of electricity and what it is, and our conversation went outside the box, and you started getting into some of the more advanced experiments that Tesla and Maxwell and others conducted throughout their scientific careers, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to continue that or really talk about anything you want in that regard.
Well, I think as long as we ended up with dielectricity, it's a good place to start, because I think the most important thing about it is the fact that it indicates that the complexity of the subject of electricity is much more vast than what people generally assume. You know, it isn't just a question of having a normal current flowing through a conductor. The basic essence of the idea is that there are essentially at least two types of electricity. One flows through a conductor and one flows through an insulator. And the characteristics associated with both of these different types of currents are vastly different. And the properties associated with them are different. It may not be 100% accurate to say this because it could be a little bit misleading without having a blackboard and talking about vectors and tensors and things of that nature. But generally speaking, the transverse wave seems to be more associated with the normal current that we experience in a conductor, whereas the longitudinal wave, which Tesla became expert at utilizing, is more associated with the dielectric form of electrical disturbance. And interestingly enough, it also suggests that if there's two types of waves available in association with electrical phenomenon, that perhaps there is more than one type of wave associated with electromagnetic phenomenon. And my feeling has always been that a more advanced civilization would not necessarily be linked to the utilization of electromagnetic waves per se, simply because of the fact that they follow the inverse square law and they lose their energy or their amplitude, you know, as a function of distance. Waves based on something else apparently don't do this. And therefore, if you were really intent on examining or looking for evidence for extraterrestrial beings, I think you'd want to concentrate on developing technologies that are capable of detecting other types of waves.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jim,
and of course, that also, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. That also pertains to power sources as well as communication devices, I might add.
Mm-hmm. You bring to mind something that that is dealt with in the environments of sound recording studios, or facilities that are designed to be soundproof. And it's the issue of a standing wave. Standing waves seem to have a peculiar characteristic that can be utilized, I would think, for power production. And, you know, in the environment of a recording studio, the desire is to stop standing waves from moving because they have a tendency to hit at angles in the room. When you have parallel walls or a ceiling and a floor that are parallel with each other, you have all these myriad of combinations that can occur in terms of that standing wave moving through space, reflecting, causing reverberation, and actually causing the matter inside the room to vibrate or to move. And so it's desirable to reduce those, but imagine if one just used standing waves exclusively for the purpose of building upon themselves and producing power. Are you aware of anyone using that technology other than for a weapon, let's say, you know, to produce power?
Well, the closest thing that comes to mind, of course, would be the laser. And we did talk about that either last week or the week before.
Mm-hmm.
But a laser is also a crystal, you know, and people may not realize that. It's a crystal that's deliberately doped with impurities, like chromium atoms, for instance, in the form of a ruby laser, which interact with the excitation radiation, which is usually a pulsed form of light. And then, due to the laws of quantum mechanics, they eventually, liberate or release that absorbed energy in the form of, a single frequency of light. And, that light bounces back and forth inside this semi-polished crystal until it finally reaches an amplitude where it just bursts out of there, and you have your well-recognized laser weapon or whatever they're using it for. But essentially, that's what happens. Now, the interesting thing is there's no reason why the same property or the same laws of physics can't be made use of in other ways to produce other results. And you and I had talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're very interested in crystals, not necessarily ruby crystals or laser crystals, but quartz crystals and other naturally forming crystals that seem to have the ability to focus and transduce various forms of energy, which are used for any number of purposes. Healing is one that we know of, but there's no reason why there couldn't be a mechanism as of yet not understood which could produce a power output from a device like this.
Mm-hmm.
There were numerous mentions made of a technology of that sort by Edgar Cayce in his readings on Atlantis. and they talked about the Atlantean power crystals and how they were used in everything from lighting to transportation during that particular era. And it's possible that it's a reality, or it was a reality.
Okay. You know what I mean?
Go ahead.
So I guess the most intelligent question is, well, okay, let's assume that something like that exists, meaning the mechanism. What would be the source of the ultimate source of the power that we'd be making use of, and how would it be brought under control or conscious control for use by our culture or somebody's culture? And the interesting thing is that if we go back and examine the basic framework of the universe, you find that there is all kinds of high-frequency activity flying around, that the sources can be any number of things. The stars, for instance, various motions of gas particles in the numerous magnetic fields that exist. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are producing these high-frequency disturbances. And, you know, they can be up in the gigahertz range, just like light is, or higher. And my concept of dealing with that is that if you study the relationships that have been developed by people like de Broglie and Maxwell and various others involving Planck is another one, involving wave mechanics, what you eventually realize is that in a given quantum where you want to hold the energy constant, if you can manipulate the frequency, you can change amplitude. And so the possibility exists, for instance, of building a special antenna which would take in extremely high frequency disturbances from all these assorted sources in the universe, which we had nothing to do with the creation of. It's basically free. And then step down the frequency while keeping the energy content fixed and increase the amplitude until you move from that situation where you've got a barely perceptible high-frequency tone or sound, if you want to use that term, to the point where you've got a low-frequency disturbance with an enormous amplitude, which can then be used to actually power something. And the interesting thing about that is that our technology concentrates on using another power source to amplify very, very tiny signals into very large signals and use that for, you know, the power of the transmission of information. But the interesting thing is that in the reverse of that phenomenon, instead of having to put power in, you can literally take power out. So instead of trying to amplify a signal, you can essentially de-amplify the frequency and create a larger amplitude in the process, which would allow you to have a power output rather than to require a power input. Now, there's a couple of theories floating around that this is one of the things that Tesla was working on with his magnifying transmitter. And by the way, you know, the term magnifying transmitter, even though it was one that he used himself, sort of suggests that there was a magnifying receiver, even though it wasn't talked about. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've studied here within the last 2 years is the possibility of a collecting antenna, which is, I don't fully understand it, so it's not something I can relate to you verbally, but essentially what it is, it's an antenna and associated electronic system that's designed in such a way that once you begin to receive a signal and literally consume that signal for some purpose, it creates a scenario by which an attractive set of forces is set up, which literally drags more of the signal towards the antenna. And you wind up with a situation where you have an amplitude growth. So it could also be that that's related to this concept of downshifting frequency.
Yeah, but you just described... I'm sorry, Jim. I was just going to say, you described the nature of these impressions I was getting all day. In essence, that was the process that I was seeing. Now, I didn't visualize the antenna, but I knew that there was some means of collecting this energy.
That's exactly what I was going to mention next, was that while we have the tendency to always think that an antenna or a transducer of this sort, you know, requires some kind of a big collecting dish and all kinds of fancy electronics, that may be true for the way in which we've decided to do these things, but it doesn't mean, for instance, that there are not other mechanisms which would afford us the same type of result, perhaps in a different band of activity. And one of those things could be, you know, like a quartz crystal or a germanium crystal or some other form of crystal structure, which by its very nature does this type of thing automatically.
Exactly.
You know, and the interesting thing is, I think that the ancients were well aware of a lot of this and made use of it in ways that they saw as practical. There are so many different megaliths, for instance, all over various parts of Europe, like Scotland and Ireland and England what was the name of the old name for France? I can't think of it right now. But anyway, those areas are covered with very peculiar stone formations that are not natural to the area. They've obviously been brought there and arranged to do some kind of a function. And it's possible that, you know, there was once an understanding of these principles on a much larger scale. And structures like the Great Pyramid or Stonehenge or some of the meshes and other strange things that are sprinkled all over the prehistoric world might have been designed to intercept and utilize these energies. And we should be concentrating now on understanding these mechanisms and resurrecting them, because we're reaching the point where this obsession with oil and all the greed that it supports is going to be our undoing eventually if we don't shift to a different, more natural form of power production. Wouldn't you agree with that, Don?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly. And, you know, as soon as we start thinking of some means of collecting, the average scientific mind turns to, well, you have to have some sort of resistance. You have to introduce this energy into a circuit where it can be controlled. You have a switch that closes the circuit to allow the energy to flow through it, the current to flow through it, and you have to be able to regulate it, so you put a potentiometer in there, and before you know it, you have to have all these electronic parts, which is all old school. to me, it's antiquated technology being used really to keep us in the dark ages. I think crystals, by their very nature, are capable of doing whatever we ask them to do, as long as we understand the laws that give them the power and the abilities that they have inherent in them.
Well, I sure agree with that. As a matter of fact, when you were talking, what came into my mind were a couple of interesting things. One, which is directly related to what you were just mentioning, is the fact that there were some early pioneers working in the field of radiology. I can't remember their names, but I'm sure that there were many. And one of the things that was discovered very early on was that there are certain types of circuits, and I use the word circuit, you know, with license, that were being designed to try to capture these anomalous energies. And the most startling thing that was discovered was that when they were working on a design for these circuits and they were drawing them on the schematics on the drawing boards, the schematics worked just as well as the finished device in terms of channeling the energy. And that was one of the early discoveries in radionics, that you can actually make use of diagrams, literally, to affect healing and to do other things, and you don't necessarily need the circuit itself. So it makes you wonder what's really going on there. You know, is it all done by intent? And if that's the case, you don't even need to make the diagram after you reach a certain point. So all these things may be, you know, overlapping varieties of reality manifesting at different octaves of perception.
Yes.
You know, the technician who has to see a circuit in front of them and be able to attach his oscilloscope to it to verify that it's functioning may be at a very lower level, for instance, than somebody who travels around just laying hands on somebody and healing them, yet they may be making use of the exact same power in different ways.
Yeah, well, you know, you bring to mind also the very act of causing colloquially referred to as cloud busting. But, you know, I can direct my attention to a cloud and cause that cloud to evaporate, to disappear. No wire attached, no special current flowing through me, no mechanical devices. Basically just using an aspect of this energy that I'm talking about and directing it with intent. So yes, our intention has everything to do with it. And I'm not doing anything that's unnatural. May not be common, but it's not unnatural.
Well, I would say that if it was unnatural, you couldn't do it.
Well, that could be argued.
Seriously, that's a very important issue, because I hear that garbage all the time. You know, it's like you try to build a machine that demonstrates a new principle, and they'll say to you, oh, well, you can't do that. That's against the laws of nature. But if I build it and it works, obviously it can't be against the laws of nature. That's an oxymoron.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that even our perception about what's permissible and what isn't, as far as the design of the universe is concerned, is something that's based on consciousness. You know, there was a time when very little was possible. Yeah, and there were people who really believed that. You know, I remember reading here statements made by very, very influential authorities back around the late 1700s, when they were experimenting with railroads and other self-propelled vehicles. And people made comments like, human life will never be able to persist at a velocity that exceeds 55 miles an hour. Well, I think we've shown that that's kind of short-sighted. And yet there was a time when people believed it, you know, and why? Because some yo-yo said so?
Yeah, you know, you bring to mind the concept of Kirlian photography as well, which is designed to show the corona discharge phenomenon that occurs around both an animate and inanimate being, otherwise referred to as the aura of that being. And there are still those that argue that it's a basically it's a mirage, it's a distortion, it's not real. And yet that energy can be photographed, that energy can be sensed by others. Perfect example is when you're standing in a line at a grocery store and the person in front or behind you causes you to feel uncomfortable. Well, if you're picking up their energy, the vibration that they're giving or sending out, if it's inharmonious, it's going to affect you. And inharmonious doesn't necessarily mean there's anything wrong. It's just a combination of two beings and one type of energy, and it resonates with one and it doesn't resonate with the other. It provides distortion. So there has been plenty of research, and there have been many attempts made to show the unseen and on film, and that occurs sometimes very unexpectedly too. When someone's taking a photograph, they'll pick up an image of a being, of a presence, of an entity that's putting off enough energy that it registers in the camera and on film, whether it's a standard negative film or if it's a digital picture. In fact, often many things that we don't see on film come out in digital pictures, because of the speed at which the photograph might be taken. Because one doesn't see it, and that's the point I was making when I described, you know, the phenomenon known as cloud busting, putting one's intent, there's an exchange of energy. In fact, I can see that energy when I do that to a cloud or to a storm. I can see the energy. I can see tiny little particles of bouncing light, if you want to describe it at that. Very faint, but I see it. It's there. And I can often see that moving through space as well, in the daylight or at night.
Well, so, you know, what you're describing is Reich talked about that, and he referred to them as orgone waves.
Mm-hmm.
And they essentially travel in spirals very close to the surface of the Earth for the most part. But what's interesting is most people can actually see stuff like that if they're trained to know what to look for. The phenomenon is not so different from looking down a hot asphalt road on a summer's day and seeing the shimmering that you see at the far end. Now those types of activities and the visions that they produce are essentially related to heat. But there's a very similar phenomenon, and it doesn't look that much different, except that it moves.
Yeah, that's what I'm describing.
Right. And that activity can be seen, you know, in certain terrains, for instance, moving across the surface of the Earth. And in the old days, it was referred to as the dragon. And it is a natural form of energy that's associated with life and with other phenomenon of a, you might say, an occult or magical nature. Are you familiar with that, Don?
Yes, yes, I am.
Well, and so there's no reason why that energy can't be tapped, and probably is in various ways.
I'm sure it is. I know people are tapping into it. Nature taps into it constantly. Nature is an open circuit, an open pathway to that energy. And it's not destructive. It merely exemplifies or demonstrates that things change. And that change does not have to be destructive in nature.
No, and actually, there's very little that's really destructive in nature, on its own accord. Of course, you've got things like volcanic eruptions and storms and whatnot, but I'm talking about in general, most of the forces that nature makes use of produce very worthwhile effects, and it's up to a conscious entity to observe and understand what these effects are and how they may benefit us as a race or as a class of being, if you want to use that term.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the tragedy of the modern world. You know, we are told what is and what isn't, as opposed to being unleashed to investigate whatever we want. And this is part of the reason why we don't get anywhere. It's like being on a treadmill. It takes us back to that form of education where you're not only asked a question, but you're given a selection of usable answers, you know? Like multiple choice tests, for instance.
Yeah,
I always hated those darn things because I wanted to say so much more than what you were allowed to say, and that's why I always did well with essay questions, because you can answer them, but you can also add your observations, your feelings, and bring in supporting evidence from other directions, you know, to guide the reader to a particular conclusion. But if you're only given three or four choices and that's all the more there is, it's pretty hard to do that, especially when the only effort you have to make is a checking of a box. That's the way our whole system is set up, if you stop and think about it. You know, self-expression.
Perfect example is a true or false question where the choices, even the choice that you would make as being the most true, is not entirely true, you know. So I understand what you mean when you want to say more, because often they don't give you the proper choice to answer the question in its entirety.
No, but it's also a form of training in a sense, you know, because you start to behave that way after a while, you know, and the people that set this whole artificial illusion of the present-day world into effect are the ones that restrict your consciousness, your creativity, your investigative abilities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's, to me, that's a really big crime, you know. That's deliberately squelching human potential.
Mm-hmm. Do you suppose, in terms of, you know, we're talking about these power grids that they're of an ethereal nature. We're not talking about telephone poles and wires and generators, but we're talking about what exists naturally. Do you think that some of the great tragedies in history before we had these exotic weapons of war, might have come about because of the mean consciousness on the planet? Say Mount Vesuvius, for example. Do you suppose that the depravity of the human species at the time was such that that negative aspect of activity and thought and low consciousness somehow contributed to a volcano? Is that a possibility?
Oh, yeah, we talked about that. I mean, don't forget, the Earth is a conscious being, and it responds to what's going on. The other thing, too, though, is kind of the inverse of that, and that is that if you look at it from the other perspective and you say, okay, well, geological situations are such that this thing was going to erupt sooner or later anyway. I always thought it was very, very bizarre that you would situate a resort city at the foot of a volcano anyway. But people do nutty things all the time. Now, I actually went there on my honeymoon and a number of years ago, and Pompeii is an amazing place, you know, to visit. But I also climbed to the top of Mount Vesuvius, and there's a little observation deck right up there on the rim of the crater, and you can see down into the throat of the volcano, and you can see the lava pit down in there and smell the fumes coming up. And the thing that came to my mind when I saw all this, which is what I was leading up to when I said there's also an inverse to that situation, there were a certain number of people, like well-educated merchants and teachers and philosophers and people like that, that actually realized ahead of time that the mountain was not behaving as normal. And they said, well, you know what? We're out of here. And a lot of people left in boats, you know, several days before the actual eruption. And everybody else kept on with their partying and orgying and whatever else they're doing there. And it's almost like saying, well, you know, nothing's going to go wrong. It's just another day in paradise. So a lot of it does have to do with consciousness either way. You know, one way is you refuse to heed certain natural warnings. And then, you know, the inverse of that is that in a more benign environment, if you produce enough negativity, it has a tangible result on the world. I think it works both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always wondered about that, because when you get accounts, historical accounts of events such as a town that's wiped out by a volcanic eruption, and people didn't heed some warning, you wonder if they got the warning, or if those that didn't heed the warning were at the root cause of it on a different level. Of course, the average person can't imagine, well, how can I be responsible for, you know, inciting a volcano to erupt? But it's it's sort of a purging of the earth that takes place. It's belching, or it's vomiting some kind of energy to purge something that doesn't resonate with it. So it's quite possible.
Well, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And yeah. I mean, that's the warning that I gave on several different shows when I said, you know, that the depravity on the planet is only going to be allowed to go so far. Mm-hmm. And if we don't clean it up as a responsible group of people on the planet, then eventually it'll reach a point where the planet will say, okay, the heck with you guys, I'll do it my way. And I mean, it's recorded in the annals of history, maybe not all on paper, although there are some places where it's actually written down, that the Earth has been destroyed at least 5 times. And I think we're working real hard on number 6.
Mm-hmm. In terms of you know, relating this to what's going on today, when you think of the process of controlling everything that occurs on a planet through the production of the planet's lifeblood, in a sense, which is the petroleum, and building a whole system, an economic system on that, which in and of itself is destructive, but the process of burning the fuel, it seems like every form of power generation that we have, in some respect, results in combustion, either through the process of transforming coal into power or oil into fuels. And we can go on and on. Nuclear energy is the same, in the same category. We're doing things that are unnatural and have akashic consequences. They have karmic consequences. And then the insanity of blaming the people that use these modalities as a means of producing power is contributing to it as well. To be told that this is bad, yet those that make it are the ones that are profiting from it. You see? It's insane.
Well, it's insane, all right, but the irony of it is that the logical actions that should be manifest by these people that are in charge would be to take an active role in supporting the natural evolution from one form of power to another as society develops. So in the beginning, they were burning wood, and then they went to coal, and then they went to oil, and then they have all these internal combustion engines. Okay, fine. They worked for a certain period. But if they weren't so busy holding on to what was produced in the early days and killing off individuals who think up new stuff for the betterment of mankind, we would be in a totally different place. What should have happened is that they should say, oh, wonderful. We have this gentleman over here who has developed a whole new concept in producing power. Let's fund that. Let's make plans to use that as the next source for the energy for humanity. But no, it's easier to put a bullet in his brain and be done with him and go right on abusing the planet. And you see, that's one of the reasons why there has to be a karmic retribution, is because people that are in the position to make those changes or affect those changes in our world, whether they want to realize it or not, they have manipulated themselves into a position of stewardship. And once you're in that position, you have responsibilities. So if you ignore those responsibilities, you create a karma, not only because you neglected the proper duties that you should be attending to, but also because you create downstream effects which have ramifications on millions of people and upon the planet. And that's why I really believe that if we don't take the bull by the horns and do something, you're going to see something happen that nobody will like. Now, you know, we talk about this on other shows. Atlantis was apparently consumed by the sea, and there were other civilizations like Lemuria and Mu that had their own way of vanishing. And people have in their minds that, oh, it has to be, you know, some violent catastrophe involving, you know, the sinking of a continent or gigantic tsunamis coming across the land. But actually, there are infinite number of ways in which the planet can do us in. And you're not going to second guess such a system as complex as it is, because the number of variables are off the charts. And we are very limited people who are trained to think only in terms of linear progressions of events. So we should realize that the very acts that we support, and by the way, one definition of support is you don't necessarily have to actively be involved in sustaining something, but if you don't do anything to prevent it or stop it, you're essentially supporting it. And so one of the ramifications of supporting this type of thing is that we are engendering all the necessary processes for some type of natural retribution. And I have 100% confidence that it's going to come. I really do.
Well, it appears that it's on the way. And, you know, the only thing that has stopped the progress of the methodologies that are used as alternative means of producing power are those that put their profit above everything else. There's no other reason other than that they made money. I can remember now, it's over 37 years ago, when we had what was called an oil embargo. And they said, we've hit peak oil, the world is running out of oil, and they began charging exorbitant amounts for a gallon of gasoline. And it doubled not too long ago, within the last decade, within the first 3 to 4 years of this current century, the prices tripled and quadrupled. And yet they keep telling us there's peak oil as we have this major catastrophe in the Gulf of Mexico and the resultant destruction. But the destruction is more from the dispersant than it is from the oil. There's always been this oil at the bottom of the ocean. Not in the amounts or under the pressures, not with the number of fractures in the crust of the earth that accompany those wells. You know, this is ignored. It's denied over and over. They lie as a matter of convenience for the moment. But the long-term ramifications keep coming back to the same issue. This is old stuff. This is dinosaur stuff. If you want to believe the lie about biotic oil, decayed plants and decayed dinosaurs, why not decayed people? Why not decayed animals of other nature? You know, it's insane what they tell us about the nature of oil. And I think the first law of nature is broken when they take it out of the ground. It served their purposes. It certainly didn't serve the Earth's purposes or any of the life forms on it. That's all they want to talk about in regard to those that use it. Again, I stress the whole scheme is insane. But they've gotten away with it for what, 200 years now? It's crazy. And certainly we have to consider that there are many, many other possibilities. And these are the same individuals that bring about wars and you know, World War III, should it come about, is, as far as they're concerned, all they have to do is run away in their little hidey hole in the ground. They think they have a place to go, but I think the Earth has some surprises waiting for them when they get down there. We've got to do much, much more than we're doing. And we have to demand that these changes occur and not in 10 years or not in 50 years, but now. We have to start on this now. Any comments before we close out the show, Jim?
Well, you know, it's interesting because what you're just describing can actually be related to literal discoveries made at Pompeii. I mean, the evidence shows that people went right on partying or whatever they were doing right up until the eruption began, and then they all tried to run away to avoid the calamity, and of course they couldn't go anywhere. And, you know, I see our present-day society doing the exact same thing. Nobody is really doing anything to stop the evil and the progression of the New World Order, or call it what you will. But once it reaches some horribly advanced state where nobody can ignore it anymore, then there's going to be all types of panic and all types of realization that, gee, we could have done something before when it was controllable, and now we can't. And it's things like that that people should be thinking about, not ignoring it, because the enemy is relentless. Even in these times when its own existence is threatened, it continues right on with the program. Have you ever noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have to be just as tenacious as they are, and we're not. And that will be our downfall.
Yeah, therein lies our own responsibility for allowing these things to occur. You know? And when you think about it, you know, we keep describing who these beings are, and the word corruption always creeps into the conversation as well, because they've accomplished what they've accomplished by being corrupt through and through, as beings, and as beings acting out corrupt activities and giving us corrupt explanations and writing it up as history. You know, it's just corruption. It's all it is. I think the earth will purge itself of that corruption as much as we have an obligation to assist the earth in that process. And by doing so, we assist ourselves. And that's,
if we don't,
that's
we'll be purged right along with the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, Jim, we're about out of time. I want to give you a chance to make a closing comment. We touched briefly on dielectricity, but certainly we hit a lot of interesting aspects of possibility. So,
well, the only closing comment I have is that I've been investigating some other things that may have a relationship to the current situation in the world, and I don't like to speak out of turn, but I'll be sharing some things with you in private, and if it turns out that you think they're relevant or you want to investigate them to a deeper extent with your abilities, then maybe that's something we'd want to talk about on a future show.
Sure, why not? Anything to expand field of experience.
Very good.
Certainly we can pick up this topic again next week if you choose to.
All right. I'll remember that.
All right. Well, Jim, listen, it's time to say goodnight. I want to wish you a pleasant weekend, and I look forward to your appearance next week on Evident Footprints. That's if the Earth is still here. If not, we'll do it somewhere else. How's that?
Yeah, I'll follow you around. Don't worry.
All right. You have a great weekend and a good night, Jim. Folks, that wraps
Thank
it up.
You,
You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and tonight's guest, Jim Murray. Special thanks go out to Wind Talkers Radio Network over at BBS Radio. On the sound tonight, Don Newsom. Also want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me next Monday when my special guest will be Dr. A. Truat. In the meantime, I wish you a pleasant weekend and a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.